Life Audio.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
We want families to come here and gain insightful strategies that empower them to successfully teach diverse learners at home.
Hosted by founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, Peggy Ployer.
Our goal is that these powerful weekly conversations will boost your confidence to cultivate the best at-home learning environment for your student.
For more homeschool resources, go to spedhomeschool.com. You're listening to Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer. We'll start the conversation with Peggy and her guests next.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com. Here's Peggy Ployer.
Today, we are going to talk about executive functioning, specifically at-home methods for developing executive functioning skills. And my guest today is Julie Wright. Welcome, Julie, and I'm glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes, yes. We've had a great conversation before the camera even turned on. And so I'm excited for you guys to meet Julie and just the things she has to share. I know a lot of you have already submitted questions to us via our website. And if you haven't done that and you have questions about executive functioning, make sure that you put them into the comments. If you're watching on YouTube, if it's working on Facebook, we just want to be able to interact with you. That's why we do this show live. So Julie, as we get started, I would love for you to just let our audience know a little bit more about you and your background as far as homeschooling and children and then why you're so passionate about this topic.
Great. It's so great to be here with everybody. Basically, my journey started with homeschooling. My son was 11 when he was diagnosed with high-functioning autism. And I needed, back then, it was 2006, there wasn't a lot of information out there. I also kind of stumbled on Twice Exceptional during that time. And yeah. I decided to go back for my master's degree because of my son. I was told he was basically too intelligent for the school. So I brought him home, both of my children. I have a younger son as well. And we just kind of learned along the way. And I found out I was okay at it. So we didn't homeschool through high school. We did for a couple of years until I figured out what we were going to do. But in the process, I went for my master's degree in education, and I did my master's thesis on executive functioning for adolescents, basically. And then since then, I continue doing research, adolescents, children, and adults, because everybody is affected by this. Like me getting older myself, I'm starting to be affected by executive functioning. So all of the strategies that I'm going to share with you today can go across the lifespan, basically.
That's awesome. Super excited to have you share that. And yeah, our kids kind of rope us into this thing. And I love the comments that you said we did well. That's really all we have to do. I think sometimes we think we have to be super great at this homeschool thing to have our kids come out on the end, and I know you're going to share some stories of how, where your kids are right now as we kind of wrap up. And so I want to just let our viewers know that, but you know, we do our best every day, and our best is all we can give. And so I know we just want to keep reminding you of that, as our viewers pop on, is that you know, wherever you're at, you have a heart to educate your child, and that is what's most important. And I want to welcome Fonda, says good afternoon. Finally caught you from the beginning. I know sometimes it's hard when we're coming on live. So glad that you're with us. And Hector also said, hi all. I'm Carlos. Sorry, I read your name from there before. And he's watching from Catholic Charities
Hi there,
Albuquerque, New Mexico. So, yes. So that's awesome. Glad to have you guys with us. And we're super excited. We're going to be adding in, like I said, a lot of questions from our viewers that were sent ahead of time, but we'd also like, just as we have viewers watching live right now, we would love you to be a part of the conversation too. So Julie, let's start talking just a little bit about executive function. And you mentioned twice exceptional. That's our theme for this month. Mm-hmm. And so how students who are twice exceptional, that means they're kind of gifted and excel in one area, maybe have some of those glitches in other areas. How does executive functioning fit in with these students? And what does that look like?
A good visual for executive functioning and executive functioning challenges. If you picture your brain as an orchestra, and the executive functioning part is the conductor. A lot of people struggle with the conductor. They don't have an effective one. So there might be the different parts of the brain are working just fine and some are struggling. So basically when we work on executive functioning skills, we're building the conductor in your brain.
Okay.
A lot of the things that you see, especially with people who are gifted and have executive functioning challenges, I'm just going to get clinical for about 1 minute, and then I'm going to go back to strategies that we all can use. They're measured in standard deviations, basically. So a standard deviation is 15 points. So if you take, I mentioned my son earlier, when we did his original neuropsychology evaluation, his IQ scored 142. His cognitive fluency, his processing speed was about 65. For twice exceptional, you're going to see about 2.5 standard deviations. So that's a lot more than two.
Wow, yeah.
So that is definitely twice exceptional. That was the original information that I saw in my son. So the way that I translate that to helping people is I look for those when people come to me with a neuropsych eval, I look for those differences in the scores, and then I listen to what the parents say, what they're struggling with. I always focus on, and I use a rating scale that Dr. Peg Dawson uses. She does Smart and Scattered. You might have heard of her with
right.
Choice Exceptional. She does a lot of research on that. But I use the rating scale, and a lot of times with executive functioning, you hear, unfortunately in the schools a lot, you hear about the deficits with executive functioning. But I actually use that rating scale to see what the strengths are too. Because
That's
when
great.
You know what the strengths are, you can bring up the weaknesses with the strengths.
Yes.
So that is my primary focus, keeping in mind that everybody is different. Every family is different. That's why it's so exciting to work with homeschool families, because you have a lot more flexibility.
Absolutely.
To work on those things.
Yes. Yes. That is so true. And, yeah, that, unfortunately, the schools just have very little time to do that. And we as parents can make that time, and how important it is to make that time, especially when you're talking about the need to pull on those strengths and help students to realize how they can utilize them to help with their weaknesses. So absolutely. So we, let's see, I think, Let me check our questions first. We have questions coming in from YouTube as well. But we are going to dive into strategies, and I think we're going to start diving into questions first. And then from the questions, we'll see what strategies we don't cover.
That sounds perfect.
So, yeah. So let's just go on down the line.
Let me give you a starter one.
Okay, that's good.
I'll start with when my son was 11. I'll give you, and actually we have an end point because he's doing something right now that really, really fits this strategy. I was scared. My son, I just found out my son has autism. And all of the things at the time you heard about autism, mm-hmm. you have to protect these children. And okay. So he wanted to ride his bike. He was 11. We lived in a very rural town in New York, pretty safe. And I had to figure out a way to let him be independent, but not, and give him basically into the hands of God, because that's what I was doing. Right.
Right.
So what we ended up doing is we looked on Google Earth at our neighborhood let's make up a map. Where would you like to go?
After a word from our sponsor, we'll dive back into this conversation.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool. Go to spedhomeschool.com to get resources and support for teaching your unique learner at home.
Let's set up a trail for you. Basically, we went over all of the rules of riding your bike, all of the hand signals that he needed to know. I went out with him a couple times to see how he was doing. He was fine. Right. So as we grew, I found strengths in him. He really, and interests. He really loves geography.
Okay.
Yeah. Fast forward. So that was when he was 11 in 2006.
Right.
Right now, he's gone through a really hard time. He's made it through college. It took him a long time to do it, 8 years to get his bachelor's degree. He started out as in computer science because he felt he was listening to everybody else, and that's what I'm going to be able to do to make money.
Oh,
it wasn't a good fit for him.
Right.
It was tricky. He ended up getting his associate's degree in computer science. He switched to geography, geographic information systems. He now works at a company that does geographic information systems. That boosted his confidence because he got a job in his field, and he has autism, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's doing great. So he decided a couple months ago, we had always talked about keep your goals, SMART goals. Okay. So he has a long-term goal and then short-term goals to build to it. Whenever he would get discouraged, I said, go with your strengths. It will help you get out of the funk you're in right now. So he travels. Okay. He's always had a hard time with directions. To be honest, so do I. So he gets that from me. So he came to visit me. He lives in another state, by the way, which is incredible. That was scary for me as well.
Right.
He came to visit me. I noticed the entire time we traveled around New Mexico, he was using his GPS. Every single time he didn't know where he was going, whether he was walking, driving, he used his GPS. So then a couple months ago, he decided, I want to go on a trip by myself. Currently this week, he is in London by himself. He had to figure out the whole trip. He even got delayed because of a snowstorm in New York. He had to extend his trip. He decided he was going to stay in a hostel, changed his decision because he realized he's staying in a pod. I'm not sure. I've seen those, but I've never seen them because he knows he needs alone time. So he really focused on how do I grow from this? How do I learn from consequences, which has always been very difficult for him. Today, just as a final two-y kind of a thing that you might all relate to, it is Pi Day.
Yes.
And he decided to take a tour of Stonehenge on Pi Day.
So that is what
he is doing today. So fast forward that 17 years of progress, of slow steps, of just learning along the way for our whole family, basically. And that's where he is today. So that's sometimes how long the strategy takes. Right. And he's still going, and
that's
he's
so
still
good.
Learning, and he's still growing.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I think we're always looking for those quick fixes, but I love that you share that, you know, it's one step, then you learn, and then another step, and you test, and you check. And I kind of heard that throughout your story. So just a reminder, as we're talking about and answering your questions, that what strategies Julie's going to give you, I want to encourage you to not just say, well, we tried that, didn't work. Keep trying it and trying different things with your kids and finding out those strengths again, that compare with their weaknesses. And it may take a little bit of trial and error too, but don't give up on that. So I think the first question I love to dive into is building up. Rosalind asks, what are some ways to build a concentration span for my child?
Okay, so as far as concentration, there's the individual things. There's about 9 indicators of executive functioning. And everybody has different ones that they struggle with. So concentration makes me think of working memory.
Okay.
Basically, for all of the indicators, I would say these 4 words, if you consider these in your journey with every single goal that you create, process, shift, consistency, and reflection. Those 4 things. The main thing that people struggle with when they have executive functioning challenges is the process of things. They don't connect. So if we, like, for instance, if you or I are baking a cake, we know all of the things. We have to get out all the ingredients. We have to get all the tools. We have to mix the ingredients. Then we have to put it in the bowl. All of the process Nice. Of making a cake might not all be there, basically. So that has to be practiced, okay?
Right.
Some of the ways that I do that actually are with mathematics, anything that you can build in a process. So with mathematics, you have to write down, or I suggest to my students to write down all of the steps until the process is in your head. A lot of people don't like math. I promise you, if you write down the steps, you will get better at math, even if you're not very good at it, anybody, any age. Mm-hmm. So as far as concentration goes, for the process, you have to practice other things that implement that process in your head. The other thing, shift, that it's very important, back to the math example, if you have a lot of times in math class, we learn one concept, then we go to the next concept, test on that, next concept, test on that. If you combine the things that you've learned and do those, that's called shift, right?
Okay.
So a lot of people have a hard time shifting. That's where you get I'm having a hard time with change or any transition, those kind of things.
Right.
Though all of those things affect your concentration. So number one, you want to get to the bottom of what is the real issue with the concentration.
Absolutely.
What are they dealing with? What are the indicators specifically that they're working with? And then work on process, shift, consistency once you figure out what kind of process you need to work on. If someone is more creative, you really need to go with strengths here. If it's better for them to learn how to knit or practice soccer or anything where there's a couple steps involved, those are the things where you're practicing shift and where you're practicing process. The reflection piece is the most important. When you get to reflection, and this you need to go by developmental age here. Okay, so I'm going to give you a high school example. If you are working with a teenager who's having a hard time remembering things, I'll give you a Dr. David Noel example.
Okay.
I just did a online conference with Dr. David Noel and Dr. Russell Barkley and Dr. Peg Dawson, all of them really, I'm going to use a lot of their information in this.
Okay.
So if you're trying to teach someone responsibility with a car, you want to make sure that they get the process, right? So you're going to go out, you're going to have a time that you have to be home, and I want to make sure that you fill up the gas tank on the way back. Okay, the child comes home, they came home on time, but oh, I couldn't go get the gas because then I wouldn't be home on time. They're all confused. What do I do now? I messed up.
Right.
No, you didn't mess up. What you want to do is ask not why did you do that, but how did you do that? What was your process right now? So we can figure out how to extend your process, make it more according to building your executive functioning skills. So, okay, let's figure out what you did. You ended up going out to where you needed to go. You came home by 10 p.m., say that was the time, but you didn't fill up the gas tank. So right now, we're going to go back to the gas station and fill up the gas tank, even if it's not open. Go anyway. Try to make – the other thing, too, is when you're trying to discuss process, make sure you have the time to do all of the steps.
Great.
If you stop in the middle, it kind of messes them up. So you want to make sure you go through all of it. Maybe do a little reward, like when you get all of these done, I'm going to give you a $5 gift card for the next time you put gas in. So it's a lot of very calm, very respectful at any age. Let's go through the how of the process. How did you internalize the process with what you know now, and how can we advance your processing?
Right.
It's a very slow process. It's not about, that's why the why needs to be taken out. It can't be, why did you do this? Why did you mess up, basically? That's
right.
What they're feeling. They feel that they messed up. They look around, especially by the time they're teenagers, they look around and seeing everybody else doing it differently than them. That must mean that they're doing it wrong. It's not that they're doing it wrong. They just don't know how
to.
So
we have to
include the how.
Absolutely. That's so good. I love that. And I might even use it with one adult child at my house. Yes, absolutely. So we're talking about that shifting and the processing. And I know we also have a question from a viewer talking about doing block scheduling. So Wendy and Fonda actually have been having this conversation on the side while we've been talking about block scheduling. And so Wendy's question was originally, can we do block schedules, example, math, history, one day, language, arts, and science, then an alternate? And Fonda came back and said that's what she had been doing this year. Is there an advantage to that, a disadvantage, if you want to get them to be a little bit more flexible? What is your opinion on that?
I would say there are advantages and disadvantages. The advantages are that they can focus on two classes per day. I think there's more disadvantages. Whenever I'm working with someone, and this is new, if they're used to the science and math classes, first of all, I would keep those together and then history and English together, definitely.
Right.
But then it's okay as long as you build in transition time. And homeschooling is great for that, right? Building
right.
in transition time, making sure you're not... this was one of the things that was really tricky about being a classroom teacher. You didn't have the time to, okay, let's put our this away and get this out and do brainstorming to bring into the next subject, make a segue so they go together.
Right.
The problem is when you're working with executive functioning, you want to do short spurts often. So it's actually better. It's kind of like with autism. Actually, I use this with everybody. Dyslexia, people who have dyslexia it works really well too. If you assign a picture to what you're talking about. So like even for a very young child, if you're talking about a ball, you want to make sure that you have several different types of balls, because if you just give one ball, then that's the connection they make to a ball.
Right. Yes.
So you
and if that ball isn't around at some point, then
it might be a tennis ball. It might be
doesn't
a soccer
translate.
Ball, it might be a football.
Right. Okay.
So The same thing with building executive functioning skills. There's a lot of brainstorming involved. And if you can do that within block scheduling, do it. That's where the knowing where the specific person, if someone has a very short attention span, block scheduling would not be good. And I would do 20-minute segments. So you really need to know what you're dealing with and try really hard to make this work with your family, not changing who the person is, because you can build on those skills by using the strengths to build up the weaknesses. So just, it's not like it can't be done. You just have to make it, don't go by someone else's guidelines, go by your own and make sure it works for you. And then yes, I think it would work.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. So there's pluses and minuses on both sides. You know, the thing that I think about is just how much my kids had to learn how to transition. And when something like interrupted, like your son's schedule and being, you know, having gone through those changes and having worked through the executive functioning, the thinking of that prepares them for that. And I think sometimes we don't allow that those changes to be a teaching tool as often as they could be. Instead, we just try to motivate or move around them and make accommodations. And sometimes that's the exactly.
That made me think of something with my son. The reason, I mean, it took him a long time to get through college. I mentioned that. The reason he finally got it was online. He ended up going online, and that was in high school too. The actual driving to and from school was very difficult for him. It just was hard for him to start over again for homework. Because he was all in one place, that worked for him. Some people online is horrible. So really observing along the way, thanks for bringing that up. Observing along the way to find out what specifically your child needs is perfect.
Right. Yeah. I think it really is the key. And we as parents, we observe our kids all the time. And so we're constantly trying to figure those things out. So if something hasn't worked, you know, take a step back, watch your child for a while and say, well, maybe why didn't that work? And what can we do different? And don't beat yourself up. You just learned. And so did your child. Yes.
By the way, teachers do that as well. Someone asked me recently, I'm not a teacher. How do I do this? You are a teacher. We are all teachers. The biggest thing everybody can use is the reflection piece. That is what I've always used as a teacher. There, you always have a different group of children, whether it's in a group or one-to-one. This worked, this didn't work. How am I going to reflect and make it different to make it more effective next time? Without that reflection piece, I don't think any of us would be good at this. So make sure you always reflect.
Absolutely. We have to remember this is a learning process for all of us, and that is so important. So we have another question from a viewer talking about the explaining things. And sometimes we as parents don't always know if we're explaining the right way. And she said, what is the best way to explain things to teens and tweens so they understand what we're working on? And don't know any more about this question, but as far as, you know, sometimes we give directions and it seems like our children aren't hearing us at all. but it may just be that they aren't processing it
I think processing or only hearing part of it. A lot of times with executive functioning, there's that process again. I might have heard, we forget that as our children get older, we think that they already know, that they can already handle 3-step directions or 5-step directions. We need to remember that a lot of times with executive functioning, especially with twice exceptional, that giftedness just, look at all these big words they use, and they really understood that concept.
Oh, yes.
A lot of times they're up to like 3 to 5 years less mature than their same age counterparts, right? So I remember that when my son ended up getting his license when he was 22. Technically, in that way, he was more like 17 when you're getting your license. So there's keep that in mind, that the maturity level might be different. but not your respect level. That's the thing that's tricky. If you want someone to be able to listen to what you're trying to tell them, you don't want that, you know, that those people that, you know, speak to someone who's deaf, they just speak louder. You don't want to be that person ever, knowing that your child might be a little more immature. They still deserve their respect of their age level, but you just might want to break down the instructions a little lower or give one step at a time. I always did the three things at a time, or three words. Maybe you're using too many words.
Oh, yes.
Maybe they just need, if you're doing, let's see, pick up your room. Right now, I want you to focus on all the clothes in your room. Everything that you see that is a textile, pick it up. Use the word textile, you know, because they can handle it because they're intelligent. So use their strengths again to bring up their weaknesses.
Yeah, that's sometimes hard to remember that, even though sometimes we have to fill in some of that executive functioning for them when they're working on that, it doesn't mean that they're still a tiny little child. Cause I think sometimes we think, well, I have to treat you like a 5-year-old because you're not getting this, but yes, maybe that's where their brain functioning with putting all these pieces together. Like you talked about that, the conductor's 5, the pieces are their age. And so that's how we have to treat them. And I love that visual that you gave us at the beginning, because it makes all these conversations and pieces really, really fit in together. Fonda came back and we had been talking about the block scheduling, and she said that they have 10 to 15 minute breaks in between 45 minute blocks. And she said, and that's worked well for her child. And so they're talking more middle schoolish type learning. And so, you know, a middle schooler can handle longer blocks, those younger kids, usually not.
Right. One of the things, Fonda, that actually you made me think of with the breaks, I'm not sure if you've heard of the Pomodoro method. That's a good thing to use with middle school and high schoolers as well. In a way, you could use it with elementary school. Basically, the goal of that is 25 minutes of work and 5 minutes of a break. I like to switch it around to fit the person. So instead of 25 minutes, if you're working on math and you're working on geometry and you have to do a whole proof, you might want to do the proof and then finish, take a break then. Within the break, it's really important to have regulating activities, because you want to encourage self-regulation. That's one of the other things that the brain is having a hard time with. So instead of, I'm not sure. I mean, for examples, for a break, you might want to go get a snack, which is good. Exercise, musical instruments, anything that encourages the two hemispheres of your brain to communicate is a really good thing for a break, especially when you're exhausted, but you still need to go further. So like I try to exercise at 3 p.m. because that's when my brain is done, and a little bit of just like movement, even if it's just stretching, brings my brain back so I can finish my day. So keep those regulating activities for the breaks, and the Pomodoro method too. Like, okay, so with maybe studying for 20 minutes and then taking a regulating break, finishing a math problem, then taking a break, five comprehension questions and then taking a break, that you want to make sure goes along with what your child can do. That might encourage block scheduling.
Oh yeah.
And make it so that you can do more of it.
Oh, absolutely. All those brain breaks are so good. It's just getting them back. And I think it's building that the consistency of, we're going to do this, but then we're moving on to that instead of, you know, just it's free time. Because we've had conversations in the past on this broadcast about that. And parents are like, what do? They don't come back. but I think listening, you know, to Julie, is that is the consistent schedule. And I think as kids get that consistency, you're less likely to lose them. As I know, that's usually a panic question I get usually after this conversation. So I think a good question that we also had come in that would be great to follow up with is one of our viewers said, I have two neurodivergent boys who, how do I get my two neurodivergent boys to ignore each other and have, I'm assuming that they're fighting because they don't have much self-control, she says. They're 7 and 8. I remember those days. So what advice do you have for Denise on that one?
Okay, Denise, this is something I've been observing lately and have been trying on myself. Everything I share with my families, I do myself, just because who's the best guinea pig, right? One of the things I notice with children of all ages, including college students, if you expect yourself schedules, let's talk about schedules real quick. I remember when my children were younger, the thing was keep your child who has, back then it was ADD, keep them busy. And I think we misunderstood what keep them busy means. A lot of these children have a difficult time with change and have a difficult time with being overstimulated. So how right. I take a schedule, and it might mitigate some of these things you're seeing, bedtime, the same bedtime, all along with keeping in mind that the blue light should go off about an hour before bedtime, not eating right. too close to bedtime, but also waking up at the same time every day and good nutrition. Yes. The two things for that, waking up the same time every day. I've been practicing this myself, waking up a good 2 hours before I have to do anything. What I've seen, I exercise also in the morning. I notice yes. a big difference when I don't do it. And I never, ever am as productive when I just wake up and have to do something 15 minutes later. It just Absolutely. Doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So I'm that's the same for children. And then if we start the day like that, by 3 o'clock, that's why your children are fighting. I'm thinking. So I would observe those kind of things. The other thing with yeah. proper nutrition, you know, I kind of try to go with the 80-20 rule, 80 healthy, 20 not. But when you have executive functioning challenges, there are studies that I'm seeing, there's like mitochondrial differences, the mitochondrial DNA just hasn't been built up as much in these children. Sure. That's something I'm noticing, just like some supplementation I've been taking and thinking about. NRF1, NRF2, those kind of things. There's a lot of research on it. And there's still a lot of people that are seeing results from it, but they're still in the PubMed.gov okay. stage, basically.
Right.
But definitely
and all that. Okay.
Definitely. And then the research that I've heard for years is omega-3s, protein, a yes. lot more in your diet. Dr. David Noel talks a lot about protein and omega-3s. So if you change those things, and I'm not one to do drastic change, if you never ate an egg in your life, try to think of something that you like that you can incorporate into your diet. If you never ate a vegetable, start with one that you like, right. and then build from there. Because I know a lot of diet is tricky with a lot of children, especially children with autism.
Exactly. So the sensory issues
I remember a pediatrician told me when my children were young, it takes 12 tastes to develop a habit or a taste for something. So even if you don't like asparagus and you have one bite, but you have it daily for 12 days, you're going to develop a taste. So good luck with that. I know it's tricky.
Exactly.
But those are the kind of things I would say I would observe more why they're arguing. Why they're having a hard time. I suspect it's the change thing, the I'm overstimulated right now and I don't know what to do with my body, basically.
Right. Yes.
So try to observe the things around there and what you can change around. A lot of times if people aren't getting enough sleep, that's going to affect their behavior, especially children.
Right.
So I would look at those things and observe.
Absolutely. The observations, even, you know, like what happened the day before, and then you had elevated conflict the next day. I know those were things for us, or there wasn't a good night's sleep, or even during certain times of the day that maybe we shouldn't have been scheduling something during that time, because that was just a bewitching hour in our household. I don't know.
Right.
And so yeah, just taking that time to observe and track and kind of be a detective about it. I love those suggestions that, that there's just so many other things at play instead of just, strategies we can use. But again, it's kind of backtracking into that. And so we had a couple questions. I know one just popped up about independent work, and we also had another question that came in yesterday too, after we had sent out our email, is on motivating. And the question from Hannah Lee was how to motivate. She had a son who's adopted, has autism, and is intellectually disabled, but she wants to work on starting to get her student doing more independent tasks. She said it's without a power struggle would be good. And I know we just had a viewer comment that they had tried independent work, but ended up the child was interrupting a lot. So is there a process, I guess, you know, moving towards that independence, which, you know, I know you know, because you talked about your son. And so what does that look like, and how can you encourage these parents who are feeling like it's such a struggle?
I think sometimes we expect too much at once, or when you think of, for a neurotypical person, there used to be the 3 weeks makes a habit deal, right?
Yeah.
It's really not that, right? One of the things, one of the best books I've ever read, whether you have an autistic child or not, is called The Loving Push. It's by Temple Grandin and Dr. Deborah Moore, Dr. Temple Grandin too. It talks a lot about how we've built up our children, how different children are now, as opposed to when they were when she was growing up, Temple Grandin, in the 50s. A lot of things we've done to build up, a lot less is expected now. The things that she talks about is video games. We're not putting limits on video games, and children love them, but it's really making it so that they're having a hard time with regular conversation, building those kind of skills. So the things that she suggests is playing board games and introducing things little by little. So if you have also accountability, I'll explain all three things. So with board games, you're encouraging your child to speak their needs. If they're not being independent, possibly they're not able to tell you, whether they're verbal or not, what they need, what they need from you so they can be independent. So for instance, with accountability, even someone who is nonverbal, find something that they can be accountable for. Even if it's you need to be accountable for putting your dish in the sink after you're finished with your meal, not washing the dishes, not vacuuming the floor, and then build from there. What else can we do?
Right.
I have a friend who has a son who is nonverbal and is in a wheelchair 24/7, but he is super, super smart. He's been tested. His reading comprehension is like college level. He's a researcher in the family. That's his accountability. Something that just really boosts up their confidence. Whenever you can boost up a child's confidence, you can help them soar, basically. Mm-hmm. So, the accountability piece, and then the slow. So like if you have a child, a lot of times children who have autism don't like loud noises or like sudden bursts, like turning on the faucet, sudden bursts of water. You want to introduce those things slowly. So maybe with the water example, this was one from Temple Grandin, a little trickle of water, play in it, explain it. Be consistent, again, learning how to shift, be there for them. Sometimes we're trying to incorporate independence and they're not ready for that level. It's not, okay, you need to be independent today when yesterday you couldn't get through five, even one problem, right?
Right.
If they can get through one problem independently in, you know, a series of, say you want them to do an entire worksheet, one problem independently, then come get me. Let's look at it. Let's go through the problem. Cool. That was great. Now let's go back and do another one and then build up to three, then build up to five. I've encouraged that with students in schools who get guided notes. A lot of times they get guided notes and that's it. It never changes on their IEP. The purpose of guided notes is to increase. One of the things I heard from my son's counselor when he was leaving high school was all of the accommodations that we've put into his IEP, he started out with a lot. He left with not a lot. I think the only thing he brought to college with him was extra time on math tests because we worked on all of those things while he was in high school.
Right.
So you never want to stay where you are. You want to keep going, but you have to move slowly in order to encourage independence.
Yes. Yes. So good. Those little baby steps and yeah, it is so hard just to think, okay, one little step, but they are going to make it. I mean, we want to see the results instantly. And, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Exactly.
And so just keeping that in mind that those are the things that you're looking for, those little, I guess, celebrations along the way and celebrating them and then adding on. And I love that, you know, it's like checking off little things, you know, all of the steps in the IEP or the different goals. You know, don't make it one big goal, make it those small goals, because those you can celebrate and then you can check off instead of saying, well, we just want you to function at a typical level. That's too big of a goal and not very measurable either. So we've been talking a lot of strategies, because I know one of the questions was just what are some strategies? And so I think we've been covering that. How about as we're kind of wrapping up with the questions, everyday types of things that, because that's what Lori had asked, what are some examples of things that we can work on at an everyday basis to build executive functioning skills?
One of the things I like to do is make sure you have fun with all of this. Just an example, this was when I was working in the schools, but you can do this for vocabulary development. A lot of times when children feel that they can't do something, a lot of this is about building confidence. So you make it fun, right? I worked in this school where the students were all middle school and not much had been expected of them before. So using process, using like breaking down math skills, vocabulary skills, we made it fun. And I would start getting phone calls from parents. My son is doing math for fun at home. What are you doing? It was all of that. Seriously, he was afraid of math. And then I got another call like a couple months later. So I knew I was doing the right thing.
Right.
Breaking things down, but making it fun. So an example, a vocabulary example. When you have a list of words, you have the words on the SAT list or whatever you're trying to do in your school.
Right.
Fun ones. Okay. So like the word bamboozle. The word dawdle. And the example of bamboozle would be, this is the April Fool's Day of words, you know, things like that. Just make it fun.
Oh, very cool.
Sometimes I feel like we're too serious.
Right.
And I know being a mom of a child with special needs, there's a lot of times where people don't want to deal with you because you're difficult for them. They don't want to go there.
So
it was the best day I ever had was when I decided that in my family, we were going to have fun. Sometimes you need to take a break. Just like with that schedule thing, don't overschedule your family. Use the times. There are specific times you will observe that your child is the best. Those are the times they're running optimally. They're on fire. Their concentration is great. Use those times for working, right? And the other times, just making process a thing with fun things. If they are using SMART goals for everything, your end goal might be to learn how to play the piano, but in the short term, you want to have a measurable goal that is, you know, maybe doing like such and such scales and having fun and having a little jamming practice. Yeah. You know, like make sure you're having fun. These, absolutely. What I'm noticing with these children as they're growing up, they're having a hard time as adults because everything has been scheduled for them. And it seems right. like people just think that when they're 18, they're on their own now and everything's fine and, exactly. and they can just do this. One of the best bits of advice that I was given by a psychologist after my son was diagnosed was you need to prepare these children for adulthood right away. And you need to do it yes. in small spurts of time. So like, when my children were 11 and 9, I didn't feel that they were ready for to be alone all night or anything. Right. But I would start by, I'm going to go get a prescription at the store. It's going to take me 10 minutes. I'm going to leave them alone for 10 minutes. Make sure that they are prepared, what they know what they have to do just in case something happens.
Right.
Really prepare your children to be adults someday. It's yes. going to make such a difference. It's going to maybe make them be able to plan a trip to London by themselves.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just all of those things. And then you see the growth along the way.
Yes.
Then you know which stage to go to next. Then it might be, you know, if you never ever left them at a party before by themselves, then maybe it's that next turn. You might be teaching yeah. other people. One of the things that I also recommend is really know your child. I remember when my kids were little and I would make them do like all, I'm not going to say we were at the church doorstep every time they were open. But at one point, I kind of needed that, right?
Yes. So uh-huh.
I would do my things. And then I would just, I learned along the way, my children are both very reserved individuals. They don't want to be around people all the time. Right. So I had to give them that out. They couldn't, even just going to groups and just hanging with the kids, their sensory system was just right. overstimulated. So yep. I needed to make sure that they had their alone time. And that's what yep. they do now. We ended up with autism. One of our strategies, we went to a company picnic and my son would always disappear. And at one point I was like, no, he's trying to be by himself. I know this, but we right. have to be at this place. So we developed a strategy that anytime we were going to a place that was foreign, we would find a safe place for him to go if he needed to be by himself. That was where I could find him just in case.
Right.
And that's what we did. So every single time we had to go to a place, this is where you can be by yourself. I did that with my students at school too. I had a couple students, one in particular who had an emotional disability, and sometimes he just couldn't be with the class. So right. I sat by himself. I just said, okay, I'm going to set aside this place. I want you to be in class. I don't want you to like act right. up until you leave class. I want you to be off to yourself. He's still hearing me, but yeah. you are not expected to participate. I'm never going to call on you when you're in this spot, but I want you to at least listen because yeah. I knew the information was getting in. So
yeah.
it's those kind of strategies, just really understand who your child is and honor who they are.
Right.
Even yes. if they're completely different from you.
Yep. Yeah, I love that, those strategies, because otherwise it turns into a behavioral thing. And it really wasn't that the child meant it to be that way. It's just that they had to create a barrier to feel protected and safe.
Exactly.
And so if you create that safe space ahead of time, then you're just preparing that. And I've learned as my children have become adults, we kind of did the same thing. I don't think I did it as intentionally probably as you had. But they do, they now even as adults will create that safe space. And I know if they've gone off to here or there, that's that alone time that they need, just to kind of decompress. So yeah. Very good. And it's good for them to know that they need that too.
Right.
And it's not just there's something wrong with me and why can't I just stay with the group? So, yeah. So one last question for you. Fonda wanted to know a little bit about your son and starting college. And I know as people were transitioning kids into the college years, she wanted to know if he started out with a full course when he started college and how did he manage that?
Fonda, great questions. And I've actually interviewed him a lot since he's been finished. He was a shining star, like valedictorian of the school he ended up going to. Just for anybody who's interested, there was I found this online school where you can take one class here and there if you'd like. It's called Wings to Soar. It sounds very similar to the school that my son went to. It was Norman Howard School in Rochester, New York, and they focused on, people with dyslexia, but then they started having students with ADHD and autism because of the executive functioning thing. So he was prepared, but he wasn't academically because he's 2E. For college, we made a lot of mistakes. And as we reflected along the way, he told me a couple of things. If he were to do it all over again, he would have had a coach. I used to be, my business is called Endurance Tutoring and Consulting, LLC. I've changed tutoring to tutoring and coaching, and he is why. he told me that it would have been nice to have a coach because he would have kept on track with organization better. And I'm not talking like I've seen a lot of coaches out there. You have to do a 6-week course or like sign up for 6 weeks. What I usually do when I work with my students who are in college is we meet twice a week or 4 times a week for 15 minutes, whatever is needed so we can go over their schedule and make sure they're on track, do a lot of reflection when something didn't get turned in. How are we going to make sure this doesn't happen again? Set up their schedule. Make sure they're setting up their accommodations. But the big trick I'm noticing is it is better to go part-time and finish than to go full-time and burn out because they're burning out. It's just too much information with the transition and everything. It was just too much for him. So if he would have started that way, going part-time, it would have been very helpful, keeping in mind that along the way, he's just starting to understand consequences. So he could, you know, fail a class because he didn't know that he knew the information, but when he didn't know the information, which is what college is all about, he didn't know how to seek out help.
Right.
So those are the kind of things that coaching would help do. Okay, let's write an email. Let's go over the dialogue of what you need to say to this professor to ask for help. And then I'm here to help you with, okay, this didn't go well. How are we going to do it next time? So that is one thing that he suggests. And the part-time thing, getting as ready as possible. There is a program at Landmark College in Putney, Vermont. I forgot to tell you about that one, Peggy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I believe it's still 2-year. They have a college program, but they have an up and coming college program that he went to when he was a junior going into senior. I think it's like junior to senior, senior to college. It's like a 3-week program. And all of the students there have some kind of twice exceptionality. They're very capable of going to college, but they have that barrier, basically. That, I swear, he grew 2 inches when he came home from that program. It was just nice for him to see that there's other people out there like him. So there are programs to get them ready, but just keep in mind that even when they're in school, they're still not ready. They're still kind of immature. So they need that support, whether it be from a coach or from you, somebody. Just don't leave them hanging.
Right. Yeah. I found my oldest was open enough with me. So when he did have those, I need to talk to the dean. We had those conversations, kind of coached him through that. And, you know, some kids are more receptive to their parents doing that than others.
That's right.
And
either.
So having that availability. And I know there's so many schools out there. And we've been looking at community college for my younger two recently. And they include the coaching and the guidance counseling, you know, that all. It's not, you don't even have to have a, you know, a, a disability per se on paper to get those services. So they're wide open and available now. And
so find them. They're not always there. That's great to hear. Mm-hmm. I would love to pass that along to my students, because that's something they have a hard time with, the one-on-one coaching. Like, they'll do group things or like meet you at the beginning of the semester, but I would love to hear more about that too.
Exactly. Yes. Thing. And also I know Wheaton College is doing some summer programs now too, that allow the students to come live on campus and try school out. And they also have, their accommodations department is working with that program so that students who have various, learning disabilities, can participate in that program and really see what college life is all about. So they're becoming more programs like that out there. And, so definitely take advantage of those. And yeah, you, like you said, finishing is more important than how fast you do it. It really is. And sometimes the learning process, is more than just the school. It's all of those executive functioning skills that are built during that learning. So I would love for you to tell people how they can connect with you, Julie. So your email is
EFCoachOnline@gmail.com. And then my website is EFCoachOnline.org.
Yep.
And I actually work with students. I also work with parents when I have time. I don't always charge for everything. I really just want to get this information out. If I can help you long term, I usually charge for that. If you would like to have a conversation to figure out what you want to do, please get in touch with me and we can try to break some things down. I don't have a lot of time these days, but I will try my best to at least have a 15-minute conversation to see where we need to go from there. And yeah, just awesome. Let me know what you need.
Very cool. Fonda said, very helpful. Thank you.
Great.
Yes. And this is definitely, I think we got through all of our questions. And some of them were kind of interweaved with others. So if I didn't see your name up there, I promise we did get to your question. It might not have just been specifically yours. So Julie, this was an amazing hour. It gave me a lot of things to think about too. I'm always learning too. So don't think just because I host this show, I know everything. I love this. I definitely get to learn along with you all. So thank you again for all that you share. And I just pray that God continues to bless the work that you're doing. It sounds like you're just, as you're growing and helping your own kids, that you're just blessing others with what you've learned. And Wendy, who is watching, also said, thank you so much. And so yes, I'm sure all of us are now feeling a little more empowered. That's what Empowering Homeschool Conversations is all about. So everyone, thank you for joining us on this broadcast. Next week, we are going to continue this conversation about Twice Exceptional Kids, and we're going to talk about scheduling home education with a whole child focus. Sometimes we get so stuck on subjects or certain things our kids are struggling with, and we forget we have a whole kid in front of us instead of just little bits. So focusing on that with our guest next week. So definitely join us back for that. Submit questions ahead of time. We'd love to include them and then join us right back here. So thanks again, Julie. And thank you all. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place right here. Until then, God bless
Bye,
everyone.
Everybody.
I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This has been Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer.
What happens when a writer and former history teacher goes toe-to-toe with his best friend, a nationally touring stand-up comedian? Total carnage, that's what. Two men enter, and two men leave because That's how it works.
Actually, you get hilarious, real, and insightful conversations about life, history, culture, faith, and everything in between.
Join me, comedian Johnny W., and my pal, author and speaker John Driver, for Talk About That at lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.